Court is now ready to hear oral argument in consolidated matters of Continental Airlines versus Schuster and American Airlines versus Schuster.
May it please the Court, Mr. Reagan Brown and Mr. Donald Herman will present arguments for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Brown will open with the first 12 minutes.
May it please the Court. This appeal concerns the issue of express federal preemption under the Airline Deregulation Act. Like other preemption cases this Court has decided, the United States Supreme Court has established a test to determine which and whether state law claims are preempted. Under this test, three critical questions are involved. And the chart to my left, copies of which have been distributed to the Court, outlines this text. The first question is, does the claim involve the enactment, enforcement, or imposition of state laws or standards? Secondly, does the enforcement or imposition of the state law claim relate to the services provided by the airline? And third, does a significant risk exist for non-uniform adjudication of the state law claim? In the case of the claims of the keepers against Continental, the answer to all three of those questions is yes, and their claims therefore must be preempted. The first part of the test focuses on the type of claim that's being alleged. In this case, the keepers have alleged the common law claims of negligence and gross negligence. The United States Supreme Court has consistently held that the term state law, as used in a preemption statute, includes common law actions for negligence and gross negligence. In American Airlines versus Wolins, the Supreme Court held that states may not impose their own substantive standards with respect to the services of air carriers. A claim for negligence or gross negligence involves the imposition of state substantive standards of care.
Do you read Wolins to say that safety-related claims are not preempted?
I think Wolins states, Justice Heck, intimates that safety-related claims related to the operations of airlines, such as air crashes, are not preempted. However, safety-related claims per se may well be preempted. And in this particular case, this case involves a claim for services as opposed to a specific safety-related claim such as an air crash or an injury resulting from the maintenance or operation, navigation, or design of the aircraft.
With the Fifth Circuit recognizes a maintenance or operation distinction. Do you agree with Hodges that part of Hodges?
I agree with that part of Hodges that recognizes that for maintenance and operation of the aircraft that those claims are not preempted. That's correct. And that's consistent with the insurance language, for example, the statute that requires airlines to carry insurance for the injuries resulting from the operation or maintenance of the aircraft. There's nothing in that statute requiring airlines to carry insurance for services, because clearly there's a distinction between the two. And that's one of the reasons why the Hodges Court misanalyzed that aspect of Wolins and the aspect of ADA preemption.
Excuse me, counsel, what I'm unclear about is you say the air crashes aren't preempted, and but an air crash case can involve a negligence and a gross negligence claim. What is it that, how do you distinguish between ordinary personal injury actions in an air crash case?
Well, for example,
which seemed to be significant to Judge Jones and the Hodges en banc opinion.
That's correct, Justice Cornyn. For example, an air crash case would meet the first part of the test for preemption, a negligence or a gross negligence claim. But it would fail to meet the second part of the test. The claim does not relate to the services provided by an air carrier. This claim, in contrast, everything about this claim relates to the services that Continental provided. The keepers purchased a ticket for first-class service on Continental. During the flight, one of the passengers made a request of a flight attendant to perform a distinctive airline service to retrieve a bag in an overhead bin, an area that the airlines provide as a service to their passengers to avoid a passenger having to check his or her baggage in the cargo bay. Everything about this claim relates to services. It does not relate to the operation, maintenance, design, or navigation of the aircraft. How
if
the aircraft
if the bag had fallen because of turbulence or because the latch had not been properly maintained, would there be a different result?
There would be a different result, Justice Heck, because that would very well result, and that result would be consistent with the operation or the maintenance of the aircraft.
What sense does that make? That depending on the causative factor in the bag falling on your head, you may be preempted or you may not be.
The sense of that relates to what Congress intended. Congress intended to preempt claims related to services. It did not intend to preempt claims related to operation and maintenance. An example of that, or an example of the distinction between those types of claims, for example, in this last term, the court decided Quest Chemical versus Elam, where the court held that because of the manner in which the action was pleaded, the breach of warranty and state law claims were preempted under FICRA, even though there may be other causes of action that are not preempted. The other aspect of the question that Justice Heck poses that is important here concerns whether a significant risk exists for non-uniform adjudication of the state law claim. That's exactly what we have with a negligence or gross negligence claim. Because in contrast to a breach of contract claim, which in the Wallins case the Supreme Court held is ordinarily not preempted, in contrast to that, a negligence or gross negligence claim involves tort duties that are imposed by law. It involves a fact-specific inquiry as to what happened and what's being alleged. And it leaves open the distinct possibility that based on the evidentiary standards of the court or based on the state-imposed standard of care, which may differ from state to state, you're going to have different results, non-uniform adjudication of the claim.
The service that the airline is providing is the handling of baggage. Is that your
There are two aspects of the service, Justice Spector. One aspect was the distinctive airline service of the flight attendant opening the overhead bin at the request of the passenger. That's the first aspect of it. The second aspect of the service was providing a position and a place for carry-on baggage during the flight and for the convenience of the passengers as opposed to requiring that passenger to stow the baggage underneath in the cargo bay.
All right. If there had been baggage that injured a non-passenger, would there be liability against the airline?
In other words, would the preemption provision apply?
On the baggage is on the cart going to the airplane and falls off and injures visitor at the airport.
We have to look at all of the facts specifically, but to address your question specifically, baggage handling was one of the aspects that, in fact, the Hodges Court specifically recognized as part of the services that were preempted under the Airline Deregulation Act. In the example that you cite, it may very well be that what happened was not a distinctive airline service, but perhaps a premises liability case. Perhaps it's too tenuous or too remote in that situation. Again, the facts would have to be analyzed. But generally speaking, baggage handling is something that is a service. In fact, the first body to address that issue was the Civil Aeronautics Board in determining what was and what was not preempted in promulgating regulations. And the CAB determined that in-flight amenities and baggage handling were the type of services that are preempted and that states may not regulate under their laws.
Now, there's CAB regulations regarding the maintenance and operation, and they clearly relate to aircraft safety regulations.
That's correct, and there are also FAA regulations that relate to the manner and the handling of carry-on baggage.
And you would agree that we don't derive preemption simply from the fact that the CAB has regulated some aspect of the service or the operation?
No, because what we're talking about here, Justice Owen, is express federal preemption based on the statute. The CAB analysis simply add some additional gloss as far as what we're meaning with in response to Justice Spector's question by the term services. It's something that can be looked at. But I would agree that when we're looking at what that term means, I think we begin, just like the Supreme Court tells us as to where to begin, with the ordinary language that is used by Congress. And that ordinary meaning is to apply and is to determine the legislative purpose here. And the plain meaning of services, which is what we have here, applying that plain meaning is, in fact, a situation that's going to be preempted. As an example,
if the pilot, if the pilot is negligent and the plane crashes, is it your position that the state tort cause of action is preempted?
No, it's not preempted in that situation.
If someone who's not a pilot, but an employee of the airlines, is negligent and injures a passenger, is it your view that a tort cause of action against that employee is preempted?
Justice Enoch, that depends on whether the injury results from a distinctive airline service as opposed to the maintenance, operation, navigation, and design of the aircraft. For example, if the individual airline employee gets into some type of a physical altercation, that would not be preempted because that's too tenuously related to services. But when we have a situation, as we have here, where a distinctive airline service is being performed at the request of a passenger.
Isn't flying an airplane a distinctive airline service?
Flying an airplane relates specifically to the operation or navigation of the aircraft. And the distinguishing feature there is that to any extent that claim would relate to services, that claim is and has been held too tenuously related for preemption purposes. This case is not.
Isn't that a steward, that a flight attendant operates an overhead bin and drops a briefcase, that is directly related to services, whereas a pilot's flying an airplane is not directly related to services.
And there you look at the definition of operation, because operation, as defined in the statute, relates to the operation or navigation of the aircraft, how the aircraft is to be flown.
I know your time's up, Mr. Brown, but quickly, could you tell me, if this case is preempted, then there may be a contract case or there may not in state court, and we'll certainly get to that in the other case, but what's the federal remedy?
There is no federal remedy, Chief Justice Phillips. That was an allegation that was made below that the Court of Appeals did not decide. The federal remedy that was sought by the keepers was an implied cause of action under the federal statute, as well as a cause of action under the federal common law. The cases have consistently refused to imply a federal cause of action and have refused to apply federal common law to this very situation in this very statute.
In considering the scope of Congress's probable intent, should we take that into account, whether Congress would have intended to deprive Mrs. Keeper, any remedy?
Justice Cornyn, that's not to be taken into account as to whether preemption applies. As to whether
determining Congress's intent, scope of preemption.
And as far as the scope of preemption, I think we can rely on Justice Brennan's majority opinion in Caterpillar versus Williams, where Justice Brennan stated that whether or not federal law provides a remedy is not the question and is not the issue as far as whether there's federal preemption. The question is, what does the statute say, and the plain meaning of this statute requires preemption.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. In Shoup, the issue is whether the Airline Deregulation Act preempts a state tort claim founded on the premise that American Airlines and Metro Airlines failed to provide meet and assist services to Mr. Douglas Shoup. Meet and assist services are an essential component of the air travel service that the airline provides. Meet and assist, as its name implies, is the service that allows persons who, because of age or in infirmity might not otherwise be able to make connecting flights. It allows them to use air travel, and for the airlines, by a separate arrangement, to provide assistance in making connecting flights. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals held in Shoup that the tort claim was not preempted. That holding must be reversed because it is decided on the wrong basis, and it places Texas state courts in direct conflict with holdings in federal court on this precise issue. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals stated at the core of its opinion that personal injury claims categorically are not law within the meaning of Section 1305 and therefore are not preempted. That position is rejected and has been rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court in both Morales and in Wolins.
Do you think Hodges was rightly decided?
Your Honor, we believe that at the core, Hodges states the correct rule for preemption. The rule, as I interpret it in Hodges, begins with the point that personal injury tort claims arising out of activities related to the safe operation and maintenance of the aircraft categorically are not preempted. We do not dispute that beginning point. The balance of Hodges, I believe, is that all remaining tort claims, personal injury or otherwise, cannot be treated as a category. Instead, they must be examined on a case-by-case basis to determine whether enforcement of the claim has the forbidden effect, as Justice Scalia described it in Morales. In other words, has the effect of the adverse effect on airline competition through rates, routes, and services. Thus, the remaining claims outside of safe operation and maintenance can neither be stated as categorically preempted, nor can they be said to have been categorically saved.
Your position in Wolins is said to be that safety claims would generally not be preempted. Is that still American Airlines' position?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So why is, if safety claims are not preempted and letting a hijacker on a plane is not preempted, how is your situation different from those?
Well, the circumstance in Shoup, of course, has nothing to do with the safe operation or maintenance of the aircraft. And in fact, the meet and assist service is a service that is provided after the operation of the aircraft has in fact been completed. So under the Fifth Circuit analysis in both Hodges and Smith, the categorical preservation of claims relating to safe operation and maintenance does not reach the service that is at issue in Shoup.
Service that airlines competitively choose to provide, that is, some have it and some don't, or is it regulated by an agency and everybody does it?
It is a competitive choice, Justice Phillips. Okay. Some airlines Conquest do not offer.
Conquest may not have it. Conquest Airlines might not have it.
Some airlines do not offer meet and assist. Others do. The meet and assist service also has the unique feature of being provided under a separately negotiated arrangement with the airline so that the passenger pays an additional price to arrive or to obtain this service.
What was the fee that was paid in this case?
I believe it was either $30 or $35.
And was there a written contract attached to that?
Not beyond just the invoice.
And did the invoice have any limiting terms on it?
Your Honor, I think
if it's not provided, you're limited to the return of the contract price.
The invoice did not, but in frankness, I believe that the meet and assist service is probably an addendum to the contract of carriage, which does have limitations of liability.
If Nader versus Allegheny Airlines were decided today, do you think it would be decided differently under the Airline Deregulation Act?
Justice Owen, I'm not sure that I'm familiar enough with the Nader case to respond to that
part
question.
Part of the held that the common law claims were not preempted. It was the overbooking case.
Yes, it would be decided differently as it relates to Section 1305. I think the clear import of Morales and Wolins is that a distinction, a determination of preemption based upon a distinction with respect to whether it is a statutory enactment or a common law claim that is imposing the state policy. It is not a proper distinction under Section 1305. Justice, back to your question as it relates to Hodges, I think it's useful to explain why American believes that Hodges at its core adopts the correct position. And that involves a historical overview of the Federal Aviation Act. Before 1978, there were two spheres of all-encompassing airline regulation. The FAA regulated matters that concerned maintenance of equipment and safe operation. The Department of Transportation and the Civil Aeronautics Board before it regulated economic matters that involved competition, such as rates, routes, and services. American's position is that the Deregulation Act was intended to lessen the sphere of regulation that the DOT and the CAB exercised in order to encourage economic competition. It was not intended to lessen the sphere of FAA regulation that dealt with maintenance and safe operations of the airline. In reviewing the cases, I believe it's fair to say there are see, my time is up.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May I please the court? Mr. Grant Gailey and Mr. Lawrence Pretty will present argument for the respondents. Mr. Gailey will open with the first 15.
May I please the court? We come to this juncture at this point in time with the Supreme Court having written the Morales and the Wolins opinion. We can take the implications and the directions that the court has given in those cases. If you look at the Morales case, you clearly come to the conclusion that you've got a situation where services are preempted, and they clearly say services are preempted, but then they say some laws affect services in too tenuous of a way to have preemptive effect. Then you look at Section 1371Q, which requires the airlines to carry insurance to cover claims for personal injuries arising from operations. So you say, where do operations begin and services end? This is, I think, at the core of the problem that the Supreme Court has left us with. What is operations? Because operations, as defined by the Act, includes the use of the aircraft. Well, the use of the aircraft involves everything the airline does from the time the passengers step foot on board the airline to the time they depart. That is the use of the aircraft. The court then leaves you with two options. You say either you have operations, which are not preempted, but what are operations, which is I think something the court is leaving itself open to define. Then you say where are laws too tenuous as to airline services to mandate preemption? And those are the crux of the issues which we're left with at this point in time.
Counsel, suppose passengers should be served some item of food from which they were poisoned. That come to that operation?
I think that is clearly something that is not preempted. That is part of their operation of the aircraft.
Not all passengers are served, and certainly not all flights get meat.
That's absolutely correct, but that's still part of their operation of the aircraft. whether some are served or none are served, that is part of their operation of the aircraft.
Is it clear to you that some personal injury claims are preempted?
I think that's a very hard line to draw. Where are they preempted? Because even the Fifth Circuit, in identifying O'Carroll, was keen to identify that O'Carroll did not involve a situation where the passenger was alleging he had been negligently personally injured while being taken off the aircraft.
So is it or is it not clear that some personal injury claims are preempted?
There is no question, but the U.S. Supreme Court has left itself open to say there is some point that there is preemption. I don't think there's any question about that, but the court has, I think in Wolins, went out of its way to identify that operations of the aircraft are not preempted. The court identified in the footnotes. You even have Justice O'Connor, who in the dissent, cites Hodges with approval. So she's citing Hodges with approval. She's joined with Clarence Thomas. There's two members of the court that are saying Hodges is the right decision. The subsequent en banc opinion in Hodges was the right opinion. You've got Stevens, which has all along was a dissent in Morales. And you've got the majority, which identifies in this footnote that the DOT is also of the opinion that operations are not preempted. And one of the, I think it's easy to sit back and say, don't look at congressional intent, just imply, I believe the words were, what does the statute say? Well, if you look at what the statute says, and the courts around the country can't agree on what should be done and how should it be interpreted, shouldn't we look at the congressional intent? Because ultimately that's what the Fifth Circuit did in both Hodges and Smith. And that was the reasoning of the court in Hodges and Smith, is they looked at the legislative intent, they looked at what the legislature was doing. The airline comes to you today and says, if a stewardess spills a pot of boiling water on your head and blinds you for life, she's liable, but we're not.
What personal injury claim do you think is preempted?
That is a line, as Justice Jolly said, a line in the shifting sands, which I cannot draw, but I can tell you.
Did you think of one in the furthest reaches of your imagination might be on the other side of the line?
As far as a personal injury, I have not been able to identify it. I understand the court is saying there is a line there somewhere where it can be drawn, but the court has not drawn that line, and no other court has either. If you look at what the Fifth Circuit did in the Smith case, if you thought a line was going to be drawn, it would have been drawn there. It was not. They identify in Smith, fall back to the economic quid pro quo, which was truly the legislative intent. No one has gotten up here and said, in the entire legislative history of the Act, there was ever a discussion about personal injuries and the need for preemption for personal injuries. That was never discussed in any context whatsoever. The only context in the Act about preemption was economic, that they don't want states to step in and to take acts which affect rates in a manner that is inconsistent with what they're trying to do on a national perspective.
But if the state adopted an Airline Safety Act which imposed quadruple liability for personal injuries on airplanes as distinct from other carriers, that would certainly affect rates and services and everything else.
There is no question, and Justice Stevens identifies this in Wolins, that any judgment of any kind against an airline at the margin affects the rates. So where does this line get drawn? The court, I said that the U.S. Supreme Court has, I think, made that somewhat ambiguous in the decisions they've issued in both Wolins and Morales. On the one hand, they want to say services, the relate-to language is very broad, it encompasses everything, but then they say, well, wait a minute, because there are areas that are too tenuous to have a preemptive effect. So, and perhaps the way you look at this is they're performing the service, but do tort laws, does the common law, and I don't really debate that these are laws, tort laws are certainly public policy of the state, but they are public policy that affect everyone, and they affect everyone equally. And so does it affect the airline service, the service that is being provided? If the stewardess goes and spills the scalding water on your head, and the state provides a remedy for the injured person, has the service that the airlines that they're providing, has that been affected? It has not. The service is still being provided. The service will always be provided. That was not part of the quid pro quo. That's not part of what was bargained for. The other thing that was identified in Woolens was that the DOT does not have the means or the ability to handle contractual claims. The DOT does not have the means or the ability to address injuries that passengers may suffer. Congress has not given them any authority to do so. As was previously identified, there is no federal remedy. So there is no remedy. The airlines come to this court saying, we may injure without responsibility because there's some need to have uniformity of result. But how do you have uniformity of result? I guess the uniformity of result is no one has a cause of action, and so it's uniform. This has nothing to do with the congressional intent of the Deregulation Act. As identified in the Deregulation Act, in 1938, when the act the Federal Aviation Act was initially enacted, it was done to protect an infant industry. Now, at that time, tort laws were allowed, but you're protecting an infant industry. They're saying now it is not an infant industry. It is not in need of this protection. We're going to free it from this utility-type regulation. That is a far cry from saying we are going to shield it, we are going to protect it, we are going to make it not responsible for personal injuries. So if you look at the congressional intent, that is where the answer is. And that is in fact what the Fifth Circuit has done in both Hodges and Smith, and I honestly think that for the airlines to prevail with this court would have to not follow either Hodges or Smith in the analysis that the court has done, that the Fifth Circuit has done in that case.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ken.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. The case in which I represent the Shoups is a little different in that it's coming up from the Fort Worth Court of Appeals a part of the Fort Worth Court of Appeals opinion that says that they have their contract cause of action for failing to provide the meet and assist service intact. In other words, the Court of Appeals held we sued basically on three theories, tort, contract, and DTPA. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals held that we don't have a DTPA claim because of the ruling in Woolens that would have a regulatory effect, which we don't argue about at this point. But they said that under Woolens, both our tort and contract claims are preserved. My opponents have not brought up the contract claim, and I think it would be very hard for them to do so because of Woolens. And yet the conduct involved with the tort claim is exactly the same as the conduct involved with the contract claim. Why should there be any difference? Aren't we really looking at whether or not conduct should be regulated and not what theory you couch it in? We say that the Shoups tort cause of action should not be preempted. It does relate to services, but not services which are preempted. There are some
doesn't that argument fall on the distinction that you already recognize that you don't have a DTPA claim? The conduct is the same.
The conduct is the same, but the in its punitive aspects and its extra damages aspects has a regulatory thrust in that it punishes and thereby regulates.
But isn't the same thing true of the distinction between negligence and contract? Punitive damages for negligence.
You could, but I think if you ask for punitive damages, you might run across the same problem as the consumer claim in Woolens. That is, that you could get maybe you can't get punitive damages in the case under Woolens.
Well, is it your contention then that the damages under your contract action and your tort action would be identical or substantially different?
They might be quite different, and that's why we're here, or why I'm here for one thing, because the damages might be quite a bit broader under the personal injury claim.
And doesn't that make that more nearly likely to be a state law that impacts on rates, regulations?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the only damages that we're going to seek are the damages things like, for one thing, they had to hire a bondsman, they had to go to court to get the boy off of the charge based on the fact that he was not mentally competent. There's some emotional damages and that sort of thing. In other words, compensatory damages is probably all we're going to be able to seek, and I can't see why those would be precluded under a negligence theory any more than under a contract theory, to the extent either theory would allow it. I find that the two different petitioners in Kiefer and Shute have a little different slant on Hodges and Smith. In the brief in Kiefer, the petitioners seem to be saying that the preemption, that Hodges and Smith shouldn't be followed because preemption, they stand for the proposition that preemption would never apply in negligence cases, therefore they're bad cases and shouldn't be followed. On the other hand, in the Shute, my opponents distinguish the case there and say that Hodges and Smith both hold that services should be preempted, and therefore there's a little difference there in that in Shute, the petitioners want the court to follow Hodges and Smith, where in Kiefer, the petitioners want the court to disregard Hodges and Smith. At least that's the way the briefs read, and I think that tends to illustrate the difference of the difficulty in this area. In fact, under Woolens and Hodges and Smith, whether the conduct amounts to a service or performance of a contract, an action predicated on the conduct involved should not be preempted unless it has a regulatory effect. Now, the most interesting case here is the Smith versus America Air West case, because that case does involve services. It involves services having to do with the boarding of passengers, and in that situation, the Fifth Circuit discussed the fact that that the Air West case did involve boarding of passengers, which was a service, and then they talked about, well, okay, it's a service, but it's not the kind of service that should be preempted. The kind of service that should be preempted is one, if it has the only thing that should be preempted is if it has to do with the economics of the situation. If it tries to tell the airlines what to do before the fact or regulates them economically, then it should be, then the cause of action should be preempted. But in Smith, which did involve a service, it was the cause of action was not preempted despite the fact it was a service because it didn't involve anything regulatory. So I think that that the Woolens Court and the Hodges and Smith Court are quite consistent.
In your view of those cases and of the law would be that no personal injury claim is preempted?
None of the cases say that. Woolens does not say that it isn't. It doesn't say that it is. Neither do Hodges nor Smith. Really, arguably, I disagree with co-counsel a little bit on this case, on his interpretation of the Fifth Circuit of the O'Carroll case. They did go out of their way to say that that wasn't a personal injury case, but what were the damages? The man was wrongfully excluded from an aircraft flight, would presumably have some humiliation damages, that sort of thing. To me, that is a personal injury type case, or at least a tort case, in which the Fifth Circuit holds that preemption would apply because otherwise would tell the airline that you couldn't kick a passenger off. That has to do with the safe operation of the airline. It would unduly regulate them to tell them what they could and couldn't do in that area. So O'Carroll is really an example of a case that at least involves a tort, if not a basic negligence action, in which preemption did apply. So that's the nearest thing that I can come to hypothecating it.
But that's a little different from a sort of a classical personal injury case.
Yes, it is. It admittedly is. And I can't.
You might have a case where a flight attendant maligned somebody or embarrassed them in a group, and while that is technically sounds a tort, arguably, you'd say maybe that might be preempted.
It might be, depending on the context and whether it had to do with the decision of whether they would get on the plane, that sort of thing. I can imagine, or I can accept in principle, that there could be a personal injury case that would be preempted. In my mind, it's not likely that there's going to be very many of them. And I tend to agree with Justice Jolly and his concurring opinions in Hodges and Smith, where he says that they shouldn't be drawing these tenuous, arbitrary lines and shifting sand, and instead they ought to just hold that basic tort actions are not preempted. I tend to agree with that. It's a little odd to find Justice Jolly on the same wavelength with Justice Stevens, but he is in this case, and both of them would hold that there was no preemption. So I think that it really kind of hinges on whether there's a decision involved. If there's a decision of the airline involved, in which the airline makes a decision to do something, or in which somebody tries to tell them what to do something, that's going to be preempted. But merely negligence in the way that they perform something that causes somebody to be injured should not be under any circumstances preempted. If there are no more questions, that concludes what I have to say about it.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Mr. Brown and Mr. Herman will present for rebuttal. Mr. Brown will open the first 3 minutes.
Mr. Brown, ordinarily in preemption cases, and I think about ERISA cases and things like that, Congress is concerned about uniformity. But is that uniformity just out the window here because some personal injury cases are permitted and others are not? I think it's well documented that personal injury cases can have a economic and therefore regulatory impact. And it's just all very circular, I guess, is my question.
In the case of the ADA preemption statute, Justice Corn, Congress and certainly the Supreme Court was concerned with uniformity. Uniformity in the manner in which states decide these issues. Uniformity in the manner in which these types of claims are adjudicated. The distinction with ERISA, of course, was that ERISA provides a specific statutory scheme for the manner in which that claim is to be handled throughout the federal court system. That, of course, is not a prerequisite to federal preemption. FIFRA is the best example of that, as well as the Federal Cigarette Labeling Act. The concern about uniformity is uniformity of adjudication. When these types of claims are subject to different state standards, different state laws, different evidentiary standards, we have a lack of uniformity.
But if a passenger who has a briefcase dropped on her head by a flight attendant may not sue under those circumstances, but may sue if there's a defective latch on the bin and the briefcase falls out. Isn't there a concern with lack of uniformity of application of this preemption?
Well, the first aspect of your question, that they may not sue, of course, that presupposes that there's no breach of contract remedy, which there may very well be, based on the contract of carriage between the passenger and the airline. But as far as the uniformity between what happens there, no, there's no problem, and there's no, you don't need to draw that concern of the distinction. And the reason for that is because we're dealing with the latter situation with the operation or maintenance of the aircraft, terms which are defined, terms where the preeminent and predominant concern is safety, versus the situation where we're dealing with services, where there are competing concerns. And in that situation, the Supreme Court has held that what Congress intended was for those concerns to be addressed not in the state courts, not subject to state law, but in fact they're to be preempted.
If Hodges and Smith are right and the dissents in those cases are wrong, can you win this case?
Justice Hack, the only way that it can be won is by drawing a different distinction between the term services, by applying the plain meaning of that language.
That's what the dissent tried to do in those cases, is it not?
That's what the dissent did, and I would urge the court in that regard to, in our supplemental brief, we discuss in detail why Hodges and Smith failed to follow Wolves. But specifically to address your question, if you look at every single question the same way it's analyzed, the only distinction between our case and Hodges is the fact that a flight attendant was involved at the request of a passenger to retrieve the briefcase, as opposed to a passenger who went up and himself got his briefcase out of the overhead bin. That's the only factual distinction.
Counsel, is Mr. Gailey correct that if you prevail in this case, this will be the first case in America where someone has suffered a physical injury, not an emotional injury, but a physical injury and has failed to, and the claim has been held preempted?
No, that's not correct, Chief Justice Phillips. We've cited several cases that are involve physical injuries in the briefs below, and in the most recent case of Harris versus American Airlines, the Ninth Circuit case decided June of this year, 55 Fed 3rd, 1478, a claim acknowledged it was a claim for emotional distress.
Well,
for
intent. That wasn't my question.
That's correct.
Is there a physical injury case that has been preempted?
Initially, you could go back to the Ball case, which of course has been overruled. That's correct. There were some other federal court cases that I believe that we've cited in our briefs below. But I would say that no distinction should be drawn, and no distinction was drawn between physical injuries and emotional injuries. The question is the plain meaning of the statute. The question is the interpretation of that statute according to its plain terms. Once that's done, those claims are preempted because they relate to services and not to the operation and maintenance of the aircraft. I believe that my time has expired.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Listening to the arguments of the respondents, it occurs to me that it can at least be said that in these arguments, the respondents have conceded the fundamental error of the court below, at least in Shoup and perhaps in Kiefer as well. As I understood Kiefer's counsel, he acknowledged that negligence is a law within the meaning of the preemption statute. He did not choose to challenge that proposition. And Mr. Priddy acknowledged that some personal injury claims surely survive. With those two acknowledgments, the court cannot accept the fundamental rule of Shoup, which is that personal injury negligence claims categorically are not preempted.
Mr. Priddy suggests a test of being where the claim is based upon the decision process of the airlines. And I didn't get his words exactly, but what I understood him to be saying is if the airlines decided we're going to provide a meet and assist, or decided we're not going to provide a meet and assist, and you have a mentally unstable individual flying on the airplane who needs that service and doesn't, and then the airlines get sued for having failed to provide this service. They haven't contracted for it. Contract's not the issue. The issue is that a airline should reasonably expect they'll be carrying passengers who will need this service and should have. If I understand Mr. Priddy's argument, he would say that the ADA would preempt that kind of cause of action because it's attempting to dictate a decision on behalf of the airlines to provide or not provide a service, as opposed to the airlines having made the decision, we're going to provide this service, and then in carrying out the service, there's negligence involved that results in a personal injury. Is that not a, could that not be a line drawing, could that not be a line that would bring some clarity to this area?
I'm not sure I understand Mr. Priddy's exact hypothesis. Obviously, under the Wolins case, the voluntary assumption of an obligation by the airline is considered to be a critical factor in a contract case as to whether or not a claim based upon that duty can be enforced, or whether by contrast a standard imposed by state policy or
state law would be enforced. That is certainly worthy of observation. I don't believe it answers the question, and I think these cases, the one thing they show is the cases are very pleading sensitive. And the idea of uniformity here will not necessarily lead us to uniform results, but the importance is a uniform rule to be applied in each of the cases. One might think of an overhead baggage case where under the specific pleadings the claim is preempted, where under different pleadings it may not be, depending upon the specific acts of negligence of which the airline is accused and whether that act is basis within the meaning of Hodges.
Thank you. That concludes the arguments and the final clauses. All the arguments we've heard this morning will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
Your audience, please rise. Oyez, 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 the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned. Subject.